Welcome to Look Ahead Radio with Tom Arms and Lockwood Phillips.
Points around the world with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio joining us this afternoon. And as we prepare the program, once again to remind you that this portion of the program has been pre-recorded since Tom is some 5 hours in time frame ahead of us, not ahead of us culturally or economically, but just in time, which is nice because he can now tell us the news that we will be hearing later this evening since he's some 5 hours
ahead of you in brain power then.
Tom Arms, I knew that was coming. Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio with us. Tom, good evening to you. Thank you for taking the time, as always.
Thank you very much, Lockwood. Always a pleasure.
And tell us, what's the weather like in London?
Once again, it's a beautiful autumn day. The sun is shining. It's been this way all week. It's going to carry on this way until Sunday. It's, you know, sort of the blue skies. As long as the sun is out, it's lovely, upper 60s, temperature, just enough perhaps to wear a sweater. But really very, very pleasant.
Oh, well, we're going to be having some, awesome weather here over the next couple of days. So, we're kind of enjoying the same concept, not quite as, not even yet sweater weather, as we say here in the States, but, not quite, as cool. With that said, let's talk about the, expectations for the year. I'm just curious. We've seen here we have in the States the, Old Farmer's Almanac, which will give us a weather prediction. And this year it's predicted for our region of the country to be rather cool, as a matter of fact, very bone-chilling cold. What's the prediction for the communities there in London and England in general?
I have no idea. Here we don't have Old Moors. We have Whitaker's.
Okay.
Almanac. But I really haven't bothered to look that up yet. I just take the weather as it comes. I mean, it just changes all the time here. So there's no point in trying to look ahead 6 months.
Absolutely. Well, and of course, with the changing circumstances, 6 months is really a lifetime there, particularly in relationship to the economy and the world politic. And I'm going to be interested in your conversation here in a few moments on Brexit. But as we always like to start off the program with you, Tom, always the image, the expectations there in the European community, and I say European community, being the continent as well as the island of England. We've been noticing with some interest events in the Straits of Hormuz, and of course the fact that we've had a drone attack the Saudis, a drone attack, and I saw in the paper this morning that the damage would be, they're back to 50% operations in the damaged areas, and they expect within the next a couple of months, they'll be 100% operational. The impact of this drone attack not having a great concern, apparently, to the Saudis. But I'm curious, is there a lot of coverage about that and any observations related to how this may influence Europe?
Yes, there's a fair amount of coverage. It's not quite the headline because we're still deep in Brexit here. But there is certainly coverage. There's several factors. One is that the Europeans are not joining America in condemning Iran as the attacker.
Hmm.
They are holding back, if you like. You know, they've noted that the Houthis have claimed responsibility for the attack, and the Iranians have denied responsibility for the attack. But they're not saying the Houthis did it. They're not saying they did do it. They're just staying out of it, if you like, staying neutral. Their hope is that if they do stay neutral, that somehow or another the Iran nuclear accord will be revived. That is their outside hope.
Okay.
You know, I think it's probably forlorn at this stage. They do know that if they give up, that certainly won't happen. So they're not going to say anything which damages that hope.
Any reaction to the president's efforts? And I just read a note here just a few moments ago that the president has represented higher sanctions on Iran. And of course, I would ask you what additional sanctions would be possible, but I guess maybe trade between Europe and Iran?
Well, they already have those sanctions in place. I mean, the U.S. has said that if any Europeans trade with Iran, then they will face themselves sanctions, or any companies that trade with Iran will face sanctions from the U.S. I can't see what more sanctions they could impose.
What is the attitude related to the president's reaction to that?
Once again, I think they're just going to try and keep out of it as much as possible. Okay. You know, they will simply say that they want to talk. They want to jaw. They don't want war.
Mm-hmm.
And anything which escalates tensions, they are opposed to.
Okay. All right. Well, we're going to get back to the issue of the Saudi relationship with Iran and oil issues as well, energy issues. But I want to move on to another item relative to the states here with you, Tom, before we get into other concerns worldwide. And, of course, recent efforts by Congress and the possibility of an impeachment of the president, and now growing concerns related to the North U.S. Supreme Court and Justice Brett Kavanaugh. And I read in a story this morning that Representative Presley from Maryland is now seeking to begin impeachment proceedings against Brett Kavanaugh. How much of that is being covered by the European community?
It's being covered, but it's well inside. You know, the problem with this particular impeachment process, or these particular claims, are the problems that's related to his confirmation hearings, and that is that they are 30 years out of date. You know, they're mm-hmm. historic, and it's very much down to memory, which goes back 30 years, and a he said, she said sort right. of arrangement. I think people think that Brett Kavanaugh, if he did it, would get away with it. And if he didn't, well, then he'd get away with it. You know, I'm not saying one way or the other because I have no idea. And I think that's generally the consensus here. Most people in Europe are of the opinion that the Supreme Court has to a certain degree become flawed in recent years. Hmm. It's become too political ever since the Gore-Bush case.
Okay.
It's just become too political. Before that, it was much more neutral. And if there was an impeachment hearing against Kavanaugh, that Kavanaugh would probably win because of it.
Well, the other aspect of this, and I'm curious if there's been any coverage related to the New York Times and the role that the New York Times played in this, to the extent that the New York Times has even had to come forward with an apology of sorts, actually a retraction.
I haven't seen much about the New York Times.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, I mean, you know, every day here, you know, our newspapers are not as thick as yours, but, you know, 8 pages devoted to Brexit.
Wow. Okay. We've got
day after day.
We've got a lot to talk about here this afternoon with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. Then final wrap up of this first program or first segment with you, Tom. What coverage is there being made of the U.S. campaign for the Democrat nomination for the presidency, the race between Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren, and Joe Biden, and all the others? Is there much in the way of coverage of the events here in the states in that regard?
Yes, there is, and there was coverage of the debate. I think people have... I think people are watching Paul Buttigieg, if I pronounce that correctly.
Buttigieg, but that's okay. Yeah.
Yeah. I think they're looking upon him as a dark horse.
Really?
I think that, there is the opinion that, Biden is old.
Uh-huh.
That Trump's description of him as slow Joe is perhaps not too far off the mark.
Oh, wow.
And that Bernie and Elizabeth Warren are a bit too left wing, and that the young mayor from the Midwest could come up through the cracks.
Pete Buttigieg. Okay, a very interesting observation about the fact that the assumption that Bernie and Elizabeth Warren are far to the left, in light of the fact that they are promoting, if you will, I want of a better description, European procedures and values.
No, but I mean, the Europeans are aware of the fact that Americans are different from Europeans. You know, I mean, you know, what might be acceptable or electable here could be completely unelectable in another country.
Okay. All right. I appreciate
that. Every country's different.
Yeah, I compliment that perception. We'll take a quick break on that, come back with more here. We're going to hear about Brexit, obviously, with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio with viewpoints around the world.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment. Welcome back to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints around the world with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and LookAhead Radio joins us every Wednesday afternoon at this time. Just to remind you, this portion has been pre-recorded to accommodate his some 5 hour. He's ahead of us by 5 hours. I'll get that out here. So it's nearly.
I'm just ahead of you generally.
Just in time, and time very, very slowly, I might add. Let's go to the topic, Tom, of Brexit. You said something a moment ago, some 8 pages of daily coverage on Brexit. What is the future of Brexit? I mean, where are we now? Because you've got a deadline in a month and a half, if I remember correctly.
Well, do we have a deadline in a month and a half? that's the issue. And where we are with Brexit is up in the air. We have a deadline. We have one piece of legislation which says that no matter what, we have to pull out on the 31st of October. But then we have another piece of legislation which says that if a deal acceptable to Parliament is not negotiated by the 31st of October, the Prime Minister has to send a letter to the European Commission asking for an extension of that deadline to the end of January. But the Prime Minister has said he will not do so, even though a majority in Parliament has told him he has to.
I thought he had dismissed Parliament.
He has dismissed Parliament, but before he dismissed Parliament, Parliament passed this piece of legislation. Now, as for the dismissal of Parliament, before the British Supreme Court at the moment, is in fact whether or not he legally dismissed Parliament. They are meeting now to hear the arguments. And so he might be declared as having acted illegally in dismissing Parliament, in which case Parliament would then immediately resume sitting.
What happens to the position as Prime Minister?
We don't know, because he no longer has a majority in Parliament, and you need a majority in Parliament to be Prime Minister. He's well short. He's 43 seats short now because people are just abandoning him. If they pass a vote of no confidence in him, he has 2 weeks in which to try and form another government. Of course, Parliament is prorogued. It doesn't sit until, I think, the 14th of October. If they have a vote of confidence in him, which would take a day or two, that means that the deadline of 2 weeks will be past the 31st of October. He claims that there's a loophole in the legislation, which nobody else can see, and a lot of people just think it's bluster, mm-hmm. but he claims that there's a loophole in the legislation blocking him from going for a no deal, and therefore he's going to pull out on the 31st of October, deal or no deal, because of the loophole.
This is confusing as all get out. This is something.
Really?
That
it's perfectly crystal clear with a big, big lump of mud.
Okay. Question for you, Tom. In light of the fact that there may be a no confidence vote, there seems to be little confidence in the current Prime Minister Boris Johnson. Who would be the alternative to him? Jeremy Corbyn? Who?
Well, that's a problem. I mean, basically, we're heading very quickly for an election. The opposition parties, and now they're called the Remainer parties, because that's everyone in Parliament who's not a Conservative, is virtually in favor of having either a second referendum or simply staying in the EU. And those parties are saying, we have to get past the 31st of October with an extension to the end of January. But we have to block a no deal before we will agree to an election.
But wait a second. Will the European Union accept an extension?
Almost certainly.
Okay. I want to get to that because there are a few other items here associated with this. A court case associated with Brexit.
That case is about his decision to prorogue or suspend Parliament. Did he act illegally? The court case will continue until tomorrow. and could continue on to next week. We probably won't have a decision until next week sometime.
How much of this is consuming the British psyche, their conversations? You said 8 pages dedicated to Brexit almost.
They talk about nothing else. They talk because it's moved on. It's dealing with major constitutional issues. The power of the Prime Minister. Does the Prime Minister have the power to overrule Parliament?
What is the view of the European press on what's going on in Great Britain?
Well, they're completely confused. But the thing that really makes them angry is that Johnson keeps saying, we're nearly there. You know, I'm confident that we'll get a deal. You know, I'm having really good talks and everything's going well. And the Europeans say, what is he talking about? He hasn't even given us a letter in writing about what he proposes.
Okay.
We're not having any negotiations. It's all bluster.
Let's talk about this in relationship to you've got a note here, the Luxembourg fiasco.
He went off for talks in Luxembourg with Jean-Claude Juncker, the head of the European Commission. Because he was in Luxembourg, his official host was, in fact, the Luxembourg Prime Minister. As is usually the case, they have a press conference after their talks, and Luxembourg Prime Minister would have been sitting in on the press conference. They had about 100 British citizens who were lined up outside the Prime Minister's office, shouting and screaming and using megaphones and everything else, protesting against Boris Johnson. That's been the case almost everywhere he's gone since he became Prime Minister. But they were particularly noisy on this instance. And so Boris said, I'm sorry, but I can't make myself heard. So I'm afraid we're going to have to move the press conference indoors. Well, the problem was that there was no office big enough inside the Prime Minister's residence to accommodate the 200 journalists.
Oh, my goodness.
And on top of that, everything was wired up for having it outside the Prime Minister's residence. So Boris simply refused to participate in the press conference. Well, and the Luxembourg Prime Minister let rip because, you know, he was just so frustrated by the fact that Boris refuses to come up with any concrete proposals, so frustrated by he won't participate in the press conference, he just let rip about what he thought about Boris, which was not very much.
In front of the Prime Minister?
In front of the press, in front of the cameras, and everything else. The result was a division in this country. We have pro-Brexit and anti-Brexit newspapers. You'd be surprised to hear that all the pro-Brexit newspapers said, what did this Prime Minister of this titchy little country of only 500,000. What right does he have to criticize our great Prime Minister? While the other one said, what a stupid Prime Minister we have for not going to the press conference.
Basically, this whole issue of Brexit has become a European issue as well, both politically and socially as well. Okay, I want to get back to a few other items with you, Tom. Again, Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio, where you're listening to Viewpoints Around the World. We're getting our class study to learn about Brexit. So we're going to talk about two other items, the Lib Dem conference there in the UK. And I want to hear about the relationship with Boris Johnson and Angela Merkel of Germany, see how that's proceeding as well. Here on Viewpoints Around the World.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment. We now return to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. Tom, you and I were just chatting a few moments ago about Brexit. The Lib Dems, and that's an organization we've been hearing about, a small party, but apparently gaining influence there in the UK as a result of Brexit?
Yes, yes. Well, they started off with 7 MPs in 2017, after elections in 2017. And because of defections and by-elections, they now have 18, which is phenomenal. You know, I mean, to go from that, I mean, it's a very low base to start with. They are very clear. They're the only party which has consistently said, we do not want to leave the EU, and we will do whatever is necessary to stay in the EU. The other parties go back and forth, they're divided, and the fact that they are very clear is starting to win them a lot of support.
One of the things we don't understand here, the whole parliamentary issue, you have the conservative and liberal wings of parliament, but you have so many other derivations of parties there that you have to build coalitions, right? And we're going to talk about this in relationship.
Not the British system, not so much. The European, definitely.
Okay.
Because we have the first past the post system here in elections.
Okay.
But in other countries where they have proportional representation, where the representation is determined by the size of the vote rather than each individual constituency, you definitely have to form coalitions.
Boris Johnson and Angela Merkel, and of course, she has been for many years the de facto leader of Europe, but particularly the European economy and the European Union. Granted, there is a whole commission, but Angela Merkel was seen as the leader because Germany's economy was the driving issue in Europe. That's changed somewhat. I know that there's greater influence now from Emmanuel Macron of France and others as well. But what about the relationship with Boris Johnson and Angela Merkel, Great Britain and Germany?
Okay, Boris is expected to meet with Angela Merkel later this week. And really, Germany is possibly the most sympathetic towards reaching a deal on Brexit. And so he's putting a lot of chips in that particular pot. He's hoping that she will come to his support. The fact is, I won't say Angela Merkel's a spent force, but she has said that she's retiring, and so she's a bit of a lame duck. She doesn't have the influence and power she had a couple of years ago. You're quite right that Macron is trying to elbow her out a bit and take pole position as the number one political power within the EU. I think he may be putting too many chips into that pot. I don't know if he'll get the result he wants.
The Israeli elections. I want to go to this. This is a big issue. And of course, the elections were conducted now almost 2 days ago. They're getting in the results. What's the future of Bibi Netanyahu?
Well, it looks like we might have another election. They appear to be totally deadlocked. The last results I've seen, it's between Netanyahu's Likud party, which has 31 seats in the Knesset so far that I've seen, and the blue and white party of Benny Gantz. Likud is the right-wing party. Blue and white is the center-left party. Benny Gantz has 32 seats, but neither one of them, neither one of those figures is enough to form a government.
And so it's going to take a coalition. There's a concern associated with criminal charges against the against
Absolutely.
Netanyahu. And this election plays a role in that, does it not?
Yes, yes. Netanyahu has put on his platform that one thing he wants, if he is reelected as prime minister, is immunity from prosecution, which sort of says, vote for me so I won't go to prison.
Obviously, Israel and the relations with Palestine, is that a concern there in the European community, or is this focused
on... Well, yeah, another thing that Netanyahu has said to try and win over the religious right is that if he wins the election, that he will annex the West Bank.
Which would only enhance...
The Palestinians and the Arabs, Europeans, they all say, look, if you do that, just kiss any possibility of peace goodbye. That's just beyond the pale. What do you think would be the position of the Trump administration on that?
Well, the president has thrown all of his support behind Netanyahu, so...
But on the issue of annexing the West Bank? Has he said anything?
No, he has not had no words whatsoever. He's been more focused.
You mean he's managed to keep his mouth shut?
Well, he's been very focused on what's happening in Saudi Arabia. We chatted on this a few moments ago. International oil reserves and the Saudi oil problems and the recent attack by Houthis, who, by the way, do not have the technology to provide and build the drones, let alone fly the drones that were attacking these Saudi oil fields.
But
the assumption is that there's a proxy war.
It's very suspicious. I don't know. The Europeans argue that it's not a firm enough case to actually, because if you're going to do it, it's a war situation.
No question.
Are you prepared to go to war over it?
No.
That's the issue.
That
is the issue.
Okay, let's talk.
When you talk about being locked and loaded, you're talking about a military attack, and you've got to have an ironclad case. I'm giving you the European view.
Okay, that's fine. A quick question. I understand that.
Does Trump want a war going into election when a big part of his manifesto was to bring back the boys from overseas?
We'll acknowledge that for the moment. Let's move on to the issue of international oil reserves and the influence this has on the European community, because obviously the Saudi oil is a major energy source for the European community.
Okay, well, let's look at the plus side to start with. According to the International Energy Agency, we are well stocked.
Okay.
Maximum oil supplies at the moment.
at the moment.
90 days of reserves in all the IEA countries, and that is the maximum. On top of that, the fact that the U.S. is now self-sufficient and, in fact, exporting oil means that the single largest consumer of oil is not as much a factor in imports from the Middle East as it was.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's the plus side. The downside is that the drone attack has exposed the vulnerability of the Saudi oil fields.
Right.
And it's raised a question. I mean, one attack, that's not so much problem. You know, they will be able to recover within a few weeks. But if they can do one attack, can they do a second attack?
Right.
And a third attack.
Right.
And a fourth attack. That's the issue. And that is the question mark. So I think there's no immediate cause for concern, but there would be if there was another attack.
I have to say that the European community should be very concerned. And I think that the president's efforts to get the Iranians to back down was the intent of his comment related to lock and loaded. But we'll see what happens.
Let me just ask this one question.
Okay.
And that is, if you did basically lock and load and attack Bandar Abbas or something like that, some sort of reciprocal attack, would that improve the supply of oil to Europe, or would it decrease the supply of oil to Europe?
But the issue,
I think, without a doubt, it would decrease it.
You know,
so you have to think of the consequences.
You know, the issue of timidity, and we've seen this in previous experiences in the world. I don't want to mention World War II, but we've seen how timidity actually helps influence the bullies.
You can argue it both ways. I agree.
All right. Let's move on. I want to talk.
You have to think it out very carefully.
All right. Tunisian elections, since we're in that area. Tunis has some elections. What's happening?
Yeah, they just had the first round of elections.
And?
And it's very interesting. No one from the political establishment made it into the second round.
Ah, so.
Which is quite interesting in itself because it's a big vote against the political establishment.
We call that the swamp.
The two people who made it into the second round are, one, an independent constitutional lawyer who came out top with 18.4% of the vote, and a media mogul who is currently in prison on money laundering charges. He's currently in prison. He ran his campaign from behind bars.
I'll tell you what.
And he got 15.6% of the vote.
Amazing. You couldn't have written this into a play and had it and had anybody buy it. That's amazing.
But Tunisia is important because it's the one country. It was the first country to basically participate in the Arab Spring.
Uh-huh.
It's managed to hold on to democratic values since 2011. And so it's held up as a beacon of hope in the Arab world as to what can be achieved through the ballot box.
Well, it'd be interesting to see how this plays out because the Arab world is in such disarray at this point. Because
the rest of the world.
Well, you remove Iran from the equation and I think things begin to improve, although you'd still have Syria as well. Quick question. Not far from Tunis, Spain, what's the issue in coalition talks? That's a country that's really made up of, well, as you pointed out in the past, five different, if you will, tribal areas. What's the future of Spain?
It's a mess. They are going to be having, in November, their fourth election in 4 years.
And what about the future of the breakup of Spain?
Well, now, this is very interesting, because it seems that the only way that the only way that the Social Democratic Party, can form a coalition is if it forms a coalition with the nationalists in Catalonia and the Basque Country.
Right.
Which, of course, they don't want to do because in order to do that, they're going to have to give them either more autonomy or independence or something like that, or another referendum.
Right.
And otherwise, they're totally deadlocked.
Okay. And of course, Spain has had its own economic problems as well. Speaking of economic problems, let's talk quickly about Ireland. And by the way, your note here says Irish taxes and apple. And I don't think you're talking about the fruit.
Not this time. They do have nice apples. We're having a great crop of apples here in the UK this year. My apple tree is just about to break its branches with all the apples that are being produced.
So, what's the future of taxes and the company Apple?
Well, what's happened is that Apple has set up their European headquarters in Ireland.
Right.
And they are paying 1% in corporate tax.
Ooh. Well, hey, listen.
1% in corporate tax.
But they're paying taxes in Ireland. Well, here in the States, we're having a problem getting them to pay any taxes.
I know. I know. And the U.S. government is getting very angry. There's a, I don't know if you've heard of him, a U.S. economist, Gabriel Zucman, who's accused Ireland of being the world's number one tax haven these days.
Ooh.
Well, the European Commission has said, you know, this isn't fair. It's not fair to all the other European countries, the EU countries. And the European Commission's job, one of their main jobs, is to ensure that there is a level playing field between all the members of the European Union. And so what they're saying is that Ireland has to claim back from Google another $15 billion in taxes.
Google or Apple? Apple.
I'm sorry, from Apple. Apple.
Yeah.
My apologies.
$15 billion in taxes. Well,
$15 billion in taxes. I think they've only collected $1 billion.
Well, I would just simply say to you that $15 billion is probably pocket change to Apple and many of these.
But it's the principle.
No.
And it's the principle for Ireland, because Ireland wants to be this tax haven because it's a principal means of generating growth in the Irish economy. It attracts people to work in Ireland. It creates jobs in Ireland.
Right. Now, you don't.
It's going through the European courts at the moment, and the Irish government is fighting it.
Wow. Okay. And of course, this gets back into the issue of Brexit. We won't belabor that today. I want to take a quick break. I want to come back to a few items with you. I want to find out why South Korean MPs, that's members of their parliament, are shaving their heads. And then we have to end it with an important story. The Egyptian fire massage. Is that correct? Stay with us. We're going to find out more here on Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment. Welcome back to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio, wrapping things up with us this afternoon. And, of course, we're always looking for this last item on the list, the Egyptian fire massage. It sounds very interesting. But before I get to that, South Korean members of parliament are shaving their heads. How come?
Well, it has to do with the appointment of this man called Cho Kuk as the justice minister. Cho Kuk has just been appointed justice minister last week. His family is heavily involved in a corruption scandal. The opposition figures are saying, you know, we don't want him as justice minister because his family is corrupt. And if his family is corrupt and he's the head of his family, he must be corrupt. A Confucian tradition going back 2,500 years is if you protest, if you feel strongly about something, you tell people, and then you have your head shaved publicly.
Wow.
And so you've got the leader of the opposition and several other members of the South Korean parliament have actually sat outside the entrance to parliament with a barber and had their heads shaved in front of the crowds.
An interesting development and display. All right. And then let's wrap it up with the Egyptian fire massage.
It goes back to pharaonic times, back to the years of the pharaohs, millennium ago.
And
this new masseur has come up. He's revived this way of massage. And what you do is you lie down on your tummy. It's mainly for back massages or back pain. He puts several layers of towels on your back. And then on the top layer, he soaks it in alcohol and sets it alight.
Okay, well,
I'm looking forward to trying it. What about you, Lockwood?
No, thank you very much. Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. I assume there's somebody standing there with a fire extinguisher of some nature.
He says he takes all precautions.
Yes. Well,
when I saw the video, I couldn't see any fire extinguisher. He claims that what it does is it removes the moisture from the bones.
Okay. Well, tell us how it turns out. Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and LookAhead Radio with us this afternoon. Tom, as always, thanks for being part of the program.
Thank you, Lockwood. Always a pleasure.
Viewpoints around the world here on the Talk Station, FM 107, AM 1240.
Look Ahead Radio is a production of the Talk Station.